I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Happy Wednesday to you.
You
are indeed in the loop. Yeah, that was specifically for you, Sean.
Appreciate that.
You're very welcome. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Reginald Attitude, Figgy Fig, hanging out with you. And you get involved with the program on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text
line. The Texas Hammer!
713-572-4610, that is the number there. Also, shout out to Mokiram Injury Lawyers for the live streams.
We keep it 100.
On YouTube and Twitch. It's a fun little dance. I enjoy that every morning.
Good.
It gets me going. I hope that it does the same for you. All right, fun show. If you like hearing Texans radio, if you like talking Texans, you definitely want to be here at 1 when we talk to John Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Let's circle back around. Let's see how he's feeling about a couple of weeks out from the draft. Like, we are 15 days?
Mm-hmm.
15 days out from the NFL draft. So, super excited for that. Let's get a little taste of what John Harris
is. I think he was bouncing around a little trade idea as well.
Yes, he was. On Texans All Access. Yeah. I heard that. So, yeah, maybe we ask him a little bit about...
Some jackass in the media said...
That is fair. So we'll get to that later in the program. Also, shout out to the Rockets making sure to get the number 2 seed without even having to do nothing on their day off.
Yep,
getting stuff done. So shout out to the Rockets. They are officially going to be the number 2 seed. It makes it so that you can train your attention strictly on the play-in games in a couple of weeks or in a week here as well. Man, we're barreling towards the end of the NBA season, and we'll talk about that as we go as well. But we start with the thing that kept me up to the wee hours in the morning. Of course, I say that probably I'm lying because I'm always up to at least 1 in the morning. It's not a good thing that I do. I probably should sleep more.
You probably should.
But nevertheless, I had a good reason for it this time. It wasn't just me messing around. Mm-hmm. It's because the Astros were playing on the West Coast against the Seattle Mariners. And by golly, they got a W.
Mm-hmm.
They did indeed get a win. They beat the Mariners. And how did that feel for you? Like... Because, I mean, the win was absolutely necessary. You went to extras for it all the way to 12 innings to make sure you got it done.
Well, let me take you to what I was telling myself as I was finishing up last night, getting a little tired, watching the Astros. I'm like, why am I staying up for this? Because it was just miserable to watch.
That's right.
So I went to bed. And then I set the alarm for a half hour early just so I could catch up on the game as I'm getting my coffee, et cetera, in the morning. And as I was watching it, I was like, why'd I get up extra early for this? Because it was a nice win. It was a nice win. I mean, you don't ever criticize those. But, man, I was asking myself that, or telling myself, that should have been a great pitcher's duel, Fromber against Luis Castillo. And it was for 5 or 6 innings. It
absolutely was.
You know?
Fromber went 6. Earned runs.
Yeah.
8 strikeouts, like, I mean, really solid. I mean, there's a little bit of some hard hits, especially early. Like, I think the first inning you had a couple of opportunities in the outfield for Jake Meyers and Cam Smith, which is not typically something you expect for Fromber, but he gave you another good outing. We will need to talk about Taylor Scott, by the way.
Yeah, we will talk about him. But then, after those two guys were out, Castillo and Valdez, you know, that's kind of why I plugged in. And then I woke up this morning, I'm like, this is not great pitching. It's bad offense on both sides. Keep in mind, you know, what do we always say about the Mariners? Ooh, what good pitching they have, but they can't hit a lick.
Correct.
Astros look like them.
You think that they decided that let's make this a fair fight, let's do what y'all do?
The Astros look like them, and I know that sounds harsh. All I'm saying is it comes back to the same thing with me. Like, I still have the same worries 11 games in now about this offense. I mean, the winning run came on a drawn-in infield. The Astros were 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position. It was just not great. Maybe you want to give it to the pitchers. That's fine. It just looked like a team that was still scuffling, you know?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, you got to win, but I don't think that you have any level of resolution or any level of, like, hope for immediate resolution when it comes to finding some offense. There were some hard-hit balls, though, right? Like,
yeah.
And we've had some games where they did that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely earlier on in the season, I felt like we were doing the hard-hit ball watch with Walker.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, man, if these find space. You had some hard hits, but you didn't find a lot of grass necessarily, although you did have 8 hits in this game. Like, you the expected batting average, I know that you love it when I give you expected
stats. Well, I don't mind it so much in baseball.
It was when you go
dynamo that kind of hurts me.
Oh, wait, no, okay. All right. So where is...
There is a line.
And is not... is it okay to then have... advanced stats, because it seems like you're up and down. All right, fair enough. Especially because y'all, I noticed y'all didn't respond to that text that I sent.
Oh yeah, I saw it
when Collis was making that mention in that first inning on Space City Home Network of the expected catch percentage on those two
flyouts. That is an eye roll when he do that.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure y'all consistent. I'm gonna make sure y'all wasn't just being jerks to me.
Yeah,
Reggie Callis.
All right, I see what we're doing here. But, no, I mean, like, watching this game, I'm still in this place where I have some concern for this offense. But you feel like there are very specific places where that concern should... You're not in a place where you're, like, overall concerned?
Because
11 games, are we doing marathons, not sprint? Is that what we're doing there?
Right.
But where are the specific places that you have?
Well, let's set aside Cam Smith. We're going to talk about him later specifically. And the ups and downs of a very young rookie out there. You know, this offense, they struck out 12 times as a team last night. The Mariners struck out 19 times. I mean, think about that. That's a lot of strikeouts. They are not, they're flailing at the ball. They're not seeing the ball. They're not getting their hits. Specifically, three guys that you got to count on. Like, the three guys that you know, especially with, you know, no more Bregman, no more Tucker, you know, whatever, you know, you feel about the rest of the team. You had to have Christian Walker come in and produce. Now, maybe it's just an 11-game slump, but he's batting 156 with a .418 OPS.
Yeah,
that's not great. That's 11 games. Jeremy Peña, what were we saying the whole spring? If he can just get back to what, you know, some semblance or maybe even hopefully better of what he was recently, there's less protection for Peña now up and down the lineup, and he's batting 154 with a .518 OPS. And then Yonner Diaz, man, that might be the biggest question mark that we have left.
That's a great point, because those other guys, like, they've had a moment here or there. Like, obviously, with the Christian Walker, if you want to try and wipe that away, we can go back to the thing that I mentioned earlier. Just as he's making some contact in decent amount. It seems like he's getting unlucky at times.
Jeremy has been up and down.
Got on the base pass a little bit as well. But... yeah, the Yainer Diaz just looks like that one looks abysmal. That one feels like he's pressing, he's expanding the zone. Like very different than what you saw last year from him. Especially because, like, it's not even the same MO on the ways that pitchers are getting after him. It looks completely different, and you wonder, like, when does that find a way to level? And then also, at what point do you? Because, and this is probably like nuclear in this instance. But at what point do you have Victor Caratini a little bit more frequently in your lineups? Because it seems like Joe Espada is willing to do that.
He's absolutely willing to use him.
And, of course, it's necessary when you have, you know, this particular bench and you don't really have left-handed bats to throw out there. But, I mean, he's willing to kind of move some things around, move and shake some things in some positions in various other places, obviously for some certain reasons, like defensive adjustments, those types of things, youth to give guys rest and stuff. But, I mean, he's just got Yainer Diaz in there, and it seems like he wants to just let him work through it. But I think it becomes more elevated and more heightened when you look around the entirety of the roster and you just aren't getting anything.
Yeah, and the other thing with Yainer, and just for the record, he's batting 061 with 199 is what I saw, 200 OPS. Mm-hmm. But, okay, if you're going to do that, you better be Martin Maldonado. And I know that's been a bad name in this city, you know, but everybody was like, oh, the way he frames pitches. Diaz is not framing pitches. Day before yesterday, previous game, there was one that should have been a strike that he just didn't frame right, Ray. He's not getting guys out on the base paths.
I'll defend him a little bit on the framing. I feel like that's more the individual anecdote as opposed to like the overall. I think he's doing a decent job framing. But I have no defense on him when it comes to, like, people are running on him. Like, he has, I think he's up there.
What
when
did
it comes
Chandler
to
Rome tweet out last night?
I missed
15
that one
out of 16 runners.
Ooh, that's not good.
15 out of 16 runners have advanced on him.
And he literally has the slowest pop time. Like, he has the slowest by Baseball Savant. Like
Mitch Garver got his third career stolen base last night. Mitch Garver has three career stolen bases, one last night, ended up being the tying run later. Maybe that was, some people would blame Taylor Scott on that because he wasn't keeping him on well. But regardless, he's not, you know, this is going to sound weird, Figgy, but, you know, at least you could always counter-argue Martin Maldonado's horrid bat with what he could do defensively. And he's not even in the same hemisphere.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, that's one of the ones that I'm really, really concerned about. And to be fair to him, in some degree, like, the pitchers aren't getting the ball to him. Like, they're slow to the
plate.
Last
night was bad with Taylor Scott.
Taylor Scott, and also, like, in a way, Framber Valdez, like, I don't know if you noticed in the second inning, and maybe I need to look more into this, and I'll ask you to see if you had any level of recognition. Was he working out of the windup with runners on base?
I don't remember that.
Because it did feel like that was the case, and I'm like, well, what are we doing? Like, of course people are going to run on you in circumstances like that. I'll do a little bit more digging to make sure that I'm like that I did in fact see that correctly. But yeah, man, that's a real concern, especially because if your offense is not going to be there, you can't be giving away free bases. Obviously, when it comes to the walks, like that's the first place that you get to. And then letting people get into scoring position, because even, I mean, you're not going to always face the Mariners who are going to leave a whole bunch of runners in scoring position. Like, you're going to see folks who are going to put the ball in play. And then you also pair that with the fact that, especially if they're, you know, long balls to the outfield, you got some concerns about making sure that you get those outs and then keeping runners at the bases that they are at previously. So, that has to get better in some degree. And, I mean, just the defense in specific needs to get better from that position. But you definitely want to make it, I guess, taste a little bit better with Yainer swinging the bat.
I mean, Seth brought it up. I mean, Jake Meyers is the second leading hitter on the team. You know who third is? Brendan Rodgers. That's not the recipe.
No.
And that's why, you know, hey, take the win, happy with the win. You know, whatever. They're still, what are they, 5-6, I think, whatever the record is. They're still scuffling all together. But Jake Meyers and Brendan Rodgers cannot be your second, third best hitter on the team.
Yeah. All right. So this text is coming in on the text line. Yainer is a streaky hitter. Some of you just going to have to live with him. And I can hear that. Was that an oversight in building this roster, in that it feels like there's a lot of guys that were saying, all right, well, there's just going to be streaks in. And I mean, it's baseball. You're going to have.
Everybody has some streak.
Some level of streak.
Yeah.
But if everyone is like more further along on the streaky hitter spectrum of sorts, is that an issue? Because at some point you have to have some people that are metronomic, like some people that you can lean on a fairly regular basis to be those guys. And then you get your pops of your guys who end up being a little streakier. It feels like everybody's in that streaky space.
Except Altuve. You know, he's been pretty consistent from the get-go here. No, look, I feel like if you're going to have a bunch of streaky hitters, that's another ingredient to a bad recipe, you know? You can't have a bunch of streaky hitters. You got to be able to rely on something.
The one thing that I can lean on in this game, you managed to get a win. Like, you just toughed it out, and obviously your pitching has been pretty good at the top. How are we feeling about this pen right now, though? Because Taylor Scott, we got, I mean, two thirds of an inning of work, and he allows a run that ultimately ties this thing back up at one. It's the thing that kept us up. late in the night because then, you know, we got into extras because of that run. And this is the day after he also, like, gave up runs that were important in that game. In fact, that was ultimately what lost you the game last night or yesterday against the Mariners. And so how are we feeling? It feels like he in particular, this isn't like a good space for him. And I have concerns about where he is in your pen. But how are we feeling about the bullpen as a whole? Because Brian King came in and was solid. And then Josh Hader did what he was supposed to do, which is funny. When he's in that instance where he's just kind of holding something down, it's great.
Hader was great.
It's when you have that save situation that it ends up being kind of funny for him, right?
No, I actually feel pretty good about the bullpen, but I think there's some tweaks that are happening. Rafael Montero gets traded for the old player to be named later, and the Astros are going to have to eat about $7 million of his contract. They're trying to find something on the back end, in the middle, or whatever you want to, wherever you want to put it. But I don't feel bad about the bullpen altogether. Taylor Scott is probably, if I had to guess, not long for the big squad.
Yeah.
And
we already see Van Wy coming up. Somebody said, will they use him? I feel like they
have to.
Have to. They feel he pitched well in spring. And I mean, I think also looking at the reporting, I think it was Chandler Rome saying that they were shopping Montero. The start of the season, him being decent, probably made it more more palatable for them, him to then be sent. So it feels like maybe that was always in the cards. But yeah, and maybe this is unfair because I want to take a step back. I'm looking at all these various aspects and talking about Taylor Scott. This does not feel nearly as bad as if your offense is hitting. Like, I have to
I feel pretty good. Okay, about the bullpen.
Right, I always have to try and step back and look around and go, all right, am I complaining about this because it's a problem, or am I complaining about this because this other portion is not carrying their weight?
Right.
You know, and I think that ultimately is part of it, which is why it needs to come around. Today, game today, 3:10, first pitch, and I'm like, one of the things that I was looking at is like, all right, maybe the Mariners, you can do something there, and I completely forgotten. It's a stark oversight for me because it's always been this case that, like, T-Mobile Park, where the Mariners play, is literally the most pitcher-friendly park in the majors. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that I'm looking forward to the possibility of runs today, but, man, I'm at the place where I'm just hoping. Like, it's just existing off of hope because I've not seen enough to get me to the place where I'm like, yo, this offense is going to get going anytime soon. I don't know that I've fully gotten to the place where I am concerned about the offense as a whole of a season, and maybe that is, I don't know what that says about me, but at least for this particular stretch, I'm concerned. And I should be also because you did the miracle last year of climbing back out. I don't know that you want to put yourself in a situation where you have to climb out again. Now, of course, right now, you're right around 500, but it could very quickly go the other way if the bats don't go.
Well, yeah, if the bats don't get going. That's why I think your point on, you know, we wouldn't even be looking at the bullpen that much. In fact, we might be saying how good it is, and I'm good with it altogether. If, you know, if Diaz was batting okay, if Jeremy Peña had a better start, if Christian Walker was, you know. So those three guys, getting back to how we started this, those three guys right now, I think, are the biggest part of the problem of why this team is where it is right now.
Yeah, and 713, great point. Talking about the AL and NL, rather, players of the week. Look at Tucker and Breggy having success when they were here. It was a slow start. It was more Bregman, and that was the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, before that, the starts weren't particularly bad.
Even Bregman wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it was just the last couple seasons. And then Tucker, I don't think he had that thought. I guess more of the problem with Tucker is what you talk about later in the season, right, and into the postseason is where I think sometimes people had criticisms of him, but that people popping up about the hitting coach again, right? Everybody's popping up about Cintron. And I don't know that I'm immediately jumped to that place, and I know that that's more than just this start. The real thing is, it just feels like you need your guys that you're
the guys that you're paying,
the guys that you pay to be there, to be that, and we'll see how that comes along. They'll get the getaway game today, 3:10. Hunter Brown on the mound. That at least instills confidence for me that at the very least the Mariners, who already aren't great bats, won't probably go off. And of course I say that and I probably jinxed it. I'll be completely honest. That's where I am with this team. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610, just getting going on a Wednesday. That was a 3-hour, 34-minute extravaganza, by the way.
Yeah, that's why I woke up at 5.
That's right. That's right. All right. Coming up next, the Rockets in a really good place, 2 seed, ready to go into the postseason. But before we get to the postseason, there's gonna be some awards. Can we make the case for Amen Thompson as Defensive Player of the Year? Let's try. You try along as well on the Jim Adler Text Hammer text line, 713-572-4610. We'll do it next.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax. For a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Some people follow the rules. I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Peggy, let's hit him big time.
Houston, let's get in the loop.
You better get ready because we're going to show up and show up.
With John Lopez.
It is what it is means nothing.
And Reggie Adetula.
And that, my friends, is a scorigami.
Always live, always local.
713, what's the damn number? 572-4610.
You're in the loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Lopez, Reggie, Figgy, hanging out with you on a Wednesday. Hope you're having a good time. Get involved on the text line, 713-572-4610. That's the Jim Allen of the Texas Hammer. Can you make the case for Amen Thompson as Defensive Player of the Year? Let's talk about it. We are a mere 3 games away from the end of the regular season. The Rockets are solidified in their playoffs. Playoff berth and solidified as the number 2 seed in that playoff berth thanks to a Lakers loss last night versus the Oklahoma City Thunder. Shout out to Oklahoma City Thunder. And so we move. Like the regular season looking like it's fairly done for. Like you've accomplished your goals and more at this point. And now we can move to kind of individual things. I think everybody mm-hmm. in this club is very much in on the collective goal, right? The whole mantra of sometimes you, sometimes me, always us.
Mm-hmm.
It reigns. But let's get into the sometimes me, right? Like let's get into the individual awards of this because Amen Thompson has been incredible this year. A lot of people have been heaping praise on him. You heard yesterday when we heard from Zach Lowe. Well, welcome back to the NBA podcast space, buddy. And he immediately wanted to make it known that the Rockets are really good, that you know they just get the thing done. Amen Thompson, really, really good. There's been a lot of praise for men. And how far can we take this praise? Like, can we get him into Defensive Player of the Year? Let's try and make the argument, Lopez.
Well, I think he's going to be maybe the most important player in the postseason for that reason alone. So making the case for him for Defensive Player of the Year is actually, it sounds kind of ludicrous because it hadn't even really been mentioned that much in mainstream. But there's an opportunity there.
Yeah.
You know, there is no real shutdown, you know, oh, that guy's Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, and I think
know?
That's the place where you start. There's no, you know, absolute. This, yeah. Especially with Victor Wembanyama hurt.
Well, he was going to be it. He was the
presumptive favorite.
Yes, 100%. But you got to play, is it 65 games?
Yes, 65 game minimum.
Yeah.
And that actually is huge because I think I heard Sean mention this earlier today on Payne and Pendergast. Mm-hmm. And this is where I will actually disagree with him. He was like, you know, narratives have formed largely and that's going to, you know, it's hard to break those, which I don't think he's wrong in that regard, but I don't think it's as heavy of an impact as you kind of would think because in years past, the award ballots, and I'll lean on you actually as someone who has been in these spaces, right? Like I think you've voted on end of season awards.
For about 5 years.
How did that process work for you before? They sent you a physical ballot at that time?
Back then they did. You had to do it. I think eventually email, but still.
And they sent it to you. When did they open this up to you?
It was actually after about the All-Star break you got them. And then the way it works, and so, I'm actually with you on this one, because when it comes to NBA MVP, that's where the narratives really carry a lot of weight. You know, this guy is so good. He's a good year in and year out. When it comes to these other individual awards, Defensive Player of the Year, guys like me, guys who are on the beat that watch the game, you know, every day at that point, you know, every team at that point I was watching because, it, you know, that was my full-time job was covering the NBA. You get to start more on that particular season. It's not like body of work, career, you know, accomplishments and all that. And so what you do is the way I would do it is I would start calling coaches and players from other cities. And just get their thoughts on certain players. So it's not like the narrative is already built. Oh, you know, this guy's going to be the defensive MVP or defensive, you know, player of the year. No, you have to build it on that particular year. So he does have a chance.
And I also think the thing I was ultimately getting to is, like, you get it, maybe you said after the All-Star break, maybe.
And you turn it in.
15 games to go.
You turn it in. It had a deadline of, like, right at the end of the season, as I remember it, maybe after the season. This year it is after the season.
Yeah, this year, especially because of that 65-game minimum, and not just this year, at the end of the year, last couple of years since they've instituted that rule, they don't even open up the balloting. So there's no chance of someone just, you know, putting down their vote with 15 games to go, ignoring those final 15 games. They're going to see it out. And what you're seeing of late is a Rockets team that surged, a Rockets team that's getting a little bit of love because of where they're finishing the season. And when you do that, when you watch that, you see, like somebody who made the case on from the 8-3-2, held Steph to 3 points. Like, you see that game, and that's fresh in your mind here down the stretch. And I think that that can help him. On top of that, can I ask you, former NBA award voter John Lopez, what did you, especially for Defensive Player of the Year, an award that there's not as many metrics that you can lean on, or at least not as many that are universally held. Like, what did you tend to, you know, base your votes on? I know you said you would kind of call and talk to some of the people that knew.
Look, 100%, as much as basketballs I think I don't know what those guys know. So I would lean heavily on what coaches were telling me. And then you bounce it off from what other coaches are saying, and not about players from their own team, about players from other teams. So, like, if you were to talk to an assistant with Golden State that you happen to know, they would talk about, Thompson, you know, just pick another player, Lou Dort, you know, whomever. And they would say, well, this is what this guy does and gives us the biggest problems. It's really more of research than anything. And then you also trust your own eyes.
Right.
You know.
And so with that, like, some of the guys that are kind of in the pool, Jaren Jackson Jr., his Grizzlies are on a massive skid. I don't think he's going to be in that great. And I'm not trying to, like, fully negative campaign, but I'm trying to set the landscape, right? Jalen Williams of the Thunder, Lou Dort of the Thunder, even Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's gotten a little love of the Thunder. Those guys, I wonder if their you know, ability with a really good defense, if they're going to kind of knock each other out, because I think they are one of those teams that has an incredibly high defensive rating when we start talking about those things, right? When we start talking about defensive rating, it is the Thunder up there with the best one. The Clippers are up there as well, but I don't think, like, maybe you go with Vika Zubac as the back line. I don't know that he is as sexy of a pick. The Magic up there, none of those guys are going to be in there. And fourth is the Houston Rockets, right? So the best defender on a Rockets team that has the fourth best defense, and he's not going to be cannibalized by some of his teammates, is Amen Thompson. Now, the question I'll ask you is, how much could you make the, or would you make the argument that Amen Thompson is what this defense is built off of? Because I think that would be the one thing that I'd
absolutely
be scared about.
Absolutely. That, I mean, he's the heart and soul defensively, and he can do so many different things, which is always good to have. But I will say, you know, as much as, you know, advanced analytics and defensive stats and all that is a big part of the way people and voters look at this thing now, it's still good to have the sexy numbers, the steals, the block shots. The things that are so obvious to so many voters and to so many really coaches as well. So you start to look at those numbers, and that's why Wemby was gonna win before he got hurt. And I think that's where Draymond Green, along with the name recognition, you know, he's going to be able to have an advantage, and he is the odds-on favorite.
Yeah, he's and by a good margin, especially because of late. He's been doing a thing where he's utilizing his media presence to also lean in, right? With when they added Jimmy Butler, the Warriors got better, and they catapulted back into a little bit more of the mainstream of NBA discourse. And he has his own podcast. I think he was on, like, NBA Today on ESPN, and he basically was campaigning, right, in a way that we see college coaches campaigning for their quarterback for Heisman or what have you. So maybe that leans in, and I do wonder, especially in a landscape where there's a lot of kind of guys and maybe not one that you specifically go to.
Yeah.
Do media members then lean on who do I know is a great defender off of not just reputation, but years past? I think he might have a leg up there. You mentioned raw stats, Dyson Daniels, who a name that maybe not a lot of people know of, young guy out of Atlanta for the Hawks. Just to give you a little bit of an idea, he's an Australian player. They call him the Great Barrier Thief, elite NBA nickname, and that's because he averages 3 steals a game.
That's the thing. Those are the sexy numbers.
If you're gonna get a wing or a guard in a what has been a big dominated award in Defensive Player of the Year, usually it's something like that, like a Gary Payton when he has those kind of steals. So I do wonder what that feels like for men, but I think that
Gary Payton's the best example.
He is very much, Tony Allen is another one. There's not a lot of, you know, guards that have been you know, all defense or have been like defensive player of the year. Marcus Smart is another one. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if you get Amen Thompson because he is so important. He is such an athlete. Like, you see him doing these chase down blocks. So you have the mm-hmm. highlights. I do wonder if that sticks visibly in people's minds. And you hear other players in the league giving him praise for how difficult he makes things and the ways in which he adjusts things.
Just yesterday, you know, he's getting a lot of flowers from around the league. I think what's going to help him the most is the postseason. If they can make a little run,
so maybe for next year.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because I think, you know, a lot of people in the game, if I were a writer, I think there's like 70 or 80 people that vote in it. You know, I think it's like two from each city and then some others and broadcasters and stuff. A lot of those people have heard about what Amen Thompson can do and hear and read all these things and see all these things, et cetera. But until they see him in person, because all these writers, especially as you get into the conference semifinals and the conference finals, they go to every game.
Yeah.
You know, or at least used to. Budgets can be a little different these days. But you used to go to every game, so you kind of get to see it up front.
Yeah. So I'm going to be honest. I don't think he wins the award this year.
No, I don't think he wins it.
Unfortunately, you look at the odds, and he's not even on the board for a lot mm-hmm. of places. They've got Draymond Green. Evan Mobley, a man that I didn't mention, he's mm-hmm. a defensive stalwart for that Cavs defense that is really good, mm-hmm. although has slid a little bit. Lou Dort, Dyson Daniels, Jaren Jackson Jr., Shai Gilgeous-Alexander also in there.
Yeah.
They're all on the odds board, and Amen Thompson isn't. I think the thing that you rest your hat on is, it seems very evident that he will be a first-team all-defender, and maybe that's a little bit stretched, but he'll definitely be on one of those all-defense teams,
yes.
100%. I think I'd probably put it at like a 70% that he's a first-teamer, and I think that's enough for right now, but he probably is stepping to a space where he might be a perennial. Just jot him down
and
on the short list of Defensive Player of the Year, which at this point, that's enough, but it'd be nice if he could get a little bit more accolades for this season. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it is Masters Week, ladies and gentlemen, a tradition like no other. Included in that is the Masters dinner, the Masters Champions dinner that happened last night. Scottie Scheffler had his menu together. What would your menu look like? That's the question of the day. What would you have to have on your Masters dinner? 713-572-4610. We'll do that as the question of the day.
Live from the Mulcairn Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
The words verbatim that just came out of John Lopez's mouth when this bumper music came on was, uh-oh, Figgy's in a mood, and he didn't mean it in a bad way.
Figgy's
he meant it in a good
mood.
Way.
Figgy's in a mood.
How we feeling, Fig?
I'm feeling good, man.
Yeah, man.
You know, I've been in this mood for a couple weeks now, man.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Feeling good.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people like it, too,
oh,
man.
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah.
Great music. You can't go wrong with this.
Mm-mm. No, you can't. And I feel like you can't go wrong with a steak. That is one of the things that was on the menu at the Masters Champions Dinner last night in Augusta ahead of the Masters 2025. And so in honor of that, Scottie Scheffler, the champion last year, and he has an opportunity to win it again this year. But in honor of that, let's get into our question of the day. What would you have to have on your Masters Champions dinner? Because Scottie Scheffler put together what I think a lot of people looked at as a pretty good menu. It was very, very indicative of himself. Like, I think
you have to do it like that. It has to be a representation, a reflection of who you are.
I feel like there's one of two ways. It's either mm-hmm. that or you just do, hey, what am I trying to eat? Like, what do I really like? You know what I mean? Because sometimes, are we allowed to play this? I legitimately don't know.
A little bit.
Them people at Augusta National, bro, they could be litigious and they have the money to do it. Like, they don't do anything that they don't want to do, and they don't want you to do.
They're a little stuffy.
Did you see the dude who was on social media?
Mm-hmm.
Like, pleading his case because he won because it's a lottery.
Oh, yes.
Tickets.
Yes.
He won tickets and he prized possession, put him in his safe personally, mm-hmm. like made arrangements, only told a few friends. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he gets a letter from Augusta National saying, your tickets have been revoked. Mm-hmm. You can't come because we got wind that you were trying to sell these. And he's like, what? I would never come to find out somebody had made a whole Facebook account with his identity trying to sell some tickets, which, first of all, how'd y'all know he had these tickets?
Yeah.
And second of all, what was your plan? Because once you agreed to some, you mm-hmm. know, sale, you ain't had no tickets to send, right?
That's called scamming.
That is called scamming.
But, like, dude is, like, I appreciate it because he clearly loves the Masters.
He
sent the tickets back, and he's like, I know I'm not going to go this year, which sucks, but I'm just trying to get it so that in the future, maybe I can go back. He is really
pleading his case. They need to take care of
him. They got to.
They need to take care of him. I would tell you my Masters story about the media tournament on the day after the Sunday, on the Monday after the.
You got to play?
Well.
I was about to say, you better not. Like, I'm going to be mad. I'm not even good at golf, but I'm going to be mad.
No, this is a reflection of how, and I love you guys, but there's a little wink wink going on over in Augusta National. So there's probably 400, three or 400 members of the media that go to Augusta National every year to cover it. And I covered it 3 years in a row. And I got wind from the previous person that was there. Take your golf clubs. They have a lottery every Saturday of Masters Week, and they pick, I want to say it's like 12 members of the media that can play on Monday morning with the flag still where they were on Augusta Sunday.
Same pin location.
Same pin location, everything. They have this lottery. I took my golf clubs all three times.
No pick.
Never got picked, but are you familiar with the name Dan Jenkins?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Got picked every year.
Okay. All right. So it's a lottery. It's a
lottery.
Got you.
The NBA lottery type of feel to it.
It's like David Stern was picking Dan Jenkins.
Man, this name is kind of cold. I went, oh, look, it's Dan Jenkins.
I saw Jenkins the last year, and I barely knew him. I knew him a little bit, but it was enough to be able to say, man, you just leave your clubs here?
He got one of them lockers in there.
You got a locker?
Man, I'm feeling lucky.
All right. So if you did not know, Scotty Scheffler, menu is as follows. Yeah. Appetizers. He went very layman. He went very blue collar, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, relatively upscale because it has to be. It's Augusta National.
Sure.
Cheeseburger sliders, apparently served Scotty style, whatever the hell that means. Mm-hmm. And then firecracker shrimp, which, nice all little right. touch.
It feels
a little Applebee's, but I ain't mad at you. Mm-hmm. And then, I like this. This means a little bit more than what it sounds like. Papa Chef's meatball and ravioli bites, which is a pecorino cheese, tomato, and basil sauce. And it's like, all right, so he had ravioli. That's actually a little good-natured ribbing from himself because he missed some time mm-hmm. earlier this year or late last year, something to that effect.
Yeah.
When he hurt himself, he stabbed himself in somewhere. He cut himself with a broken wine glass when he was
making ravioli. I completely forgot about that till you reminded me.
Yeah, so I thought that was funny. Mm-hmm. But then the first course is basically a Frito pie, mm-hmm. Texas style chili, cheese, jalapenos, corn chips, and then the main course is a cowboy ribeye steak or black and red fish, mac and cheese, cream corn, Brussels sprouts, and sweet potatoes. And they finish it off with a warm chocolate chip skillet cookie with some ice cream on top.
Everything good except the cookie.
See, you also getting on it. The cookie is great.
The cookie.
But I'm not going to lie. The whole menu does feel like you went to BJ's Brew House. Like, it's good, but also, like, this feels kind of chain.
Very
it feels kind of chain restaurant. Yeah. So, Lopez, how are you? Where are you going? Because it seems like you're going with something that speaks to your heritage.
I wrote mine down. Right. I was so excited about this.
Because, all right, what you got?
Because it has to be a reflection of you now. Okay, and who you are.
So wait, Reggie, you got your passport? You got the passport?
I actually need to, this is funny, actually need to go get that done.
Okay, we probably about to go over to France.
No, Lopez. It's me, just like who I am.
Now we going to San Antonio, I don't need a passport.
We got to go to Germany
so
to get this wine.
You got me thinking a little bit, there's one in Argentina that I might have, but anyway, appetizer, pork empanadas, and chicken enchilada dip.
I'm here with it.
You got to go,
I'm here with
that's
it.
My roots. That's where it starts. Homemade pork empanadas and chicken enchilada dip. Then you go into the real me now. Smoked beef ribs with spatchcock chicken glazed in OG sauce. Because you got to have the barbecue, you know. And the best bite in barbecue is beef ribs. Like, remember those big ribs we had at the tailgate?
Yeah.
That is the best bite in barbecue. And spatchcock chicken is so good. It's the one that's kind of flared out, open, so good.
And that's the first course?
Is that the main course? The appetizer would be the empanadas and chicken enchilada dip. Main course, beef ribs, smoked beef ribs with spatchcock chicken glazed in OG sauce.
You went all the way. You just give me the basics, dog. What is happening here?
Sides. And you've had some of this before because it's the same recipe. Grandma Lopez's potato salad.
Okay.
And charro beans with Elgin sausage cookie crumbles.
Okay, cool.
You ever had Elgin sausage? Best on the planet.
I have.
Best on the planet.
I'm very, very fortunate to have had some.
Yeah, that's mixed up, crumbled into the charro beans. And then dessert, homemade peach cobbler with homemade whipped cream and homemade vanilla ice cream.
I respect that you went with an elevated dessert.
Yeah.
I That's the only thing I got to say against Scotty here is that everything is relatively simple. Go ahead and go elevated in my mind. Some people that are on the text line here, some people said that the crab meat cheesecake. Wait, what is that? Cheese? Crab meat cheesecake?
Crab meat cheesecake.
I am confused as to what we're doing here, 713. Caesar salad, main entree, lamb shank braised in port wine served with prosciutto wrapped asparagus. Oh, y'all went wild. Wild rice. Mm-hmm. And then they went with a souffle for dessert. I'm judging everybody on the dessert. I'm going to be honest. That is particularly where I'm going. Someone said pig wings and sweet potato waffle fries for one of the appetizers. I like what you're doing there. Chicken fried backstrap and black and red snapper. Okay, that's Nutton Clear Lake. Shout out to you. And then someone said pork ribs over beef ribs. So they're shouting you out there. Figgy, all right, you don't have to give me a whole menu. I don't know if you have one, but what's something that you absolutely got to have on here?
Yeah, I tried to come up with a whole menu. So with the appetizer, I got to go with the bacon jalapeno popper dip.
Oh, of course. Chips.
Yeah, of course.
The MVP of Super Bowl trip. Yeah. That's right.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I'm looking at his list. So, he got like a first course.
Yeah. So appetizer.
Is that kind of like an appetizer?
Yeah.
Too?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the, some dry rub, probably like some dry rub wings.
Okay.
Some type of seasoning. That's dry smart. Rub wings.
That's a good call.
And then I want to throw in the charred grilled oysters.
Oh, God. That's a good
because
pick.
Because that's, you know, that's not that's too heavy or nothing like that.
Yeah.
And then for the main course, I would like to do like a char grilled steak with the five pepper seasoning on it.
Yep, good choice.
As far as size, I got to go with the Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some put a little sweetness to it.
Yep.
And
probably put a little honey on them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what they be putting on every because I had some 2 days ago and it was really good. I went to Bungalows.
Okay.
And they had some really good Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. But top it off with some mac and cheese, like a
of
real
course
mac
I should have picked that one.
Yeah,
I should have seen that mac. One coming. Yeah,
yeah, like a real good baked mac.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
chips and chili con queso, boudin egg rolls, smoked wings, brisket banana pudding. All right, a good wait, brisket banana pudding, brisket and banana pudding. Is there a separation in there?
There's got to be.
I might be bugging here. All right, yeah. So this is the thing for me, fellas, is that I can't put together a full menu because what I would my theory would be too elevated for me to execute. I'm not a restaurateur. My thought is, in your same vein, like do something that speaks to you. And I'm trying to like pull from. I'm trying to pull way too many things together. Like I'm trying to pull my Nigerian.
Like
identity.
I didn't even do any fish.
I'm trying to hit Houston hard.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm like, all right. So I definitely want some like jollof rice, right? We just need some Nigerian. And that's not even, I could go crazy with it. I could do some pound of yam or something. I'm not doing all that. But I'm also like, I want to get some crawfish or something in here. Mm-hmm. Like,
come on.
Like, I want to get some.
You all over the
place. Yeah, make a call.
I want to get like some pad see you for some Thai food.
Hey, that chef, chef is throwing up his hands right now.
Like,
Korean rice in there too.
That. Do you see it? I was like Korean wings. I'm like, I'm doing way too many different things. I don't know how I can make this happen. But I just wanted to let you know I want all of those things. In fact, I'm gonna do the thing where I just throw this out here. I'm like, hey, y'all gonna eat all this? Y'all gonna have bubble guts all week? Deal with it. But the one thing I need is some fire bread pudding on the back end.
See, like, those are the kind of desserts I like. You're like me. I like the bread puddings. I like the cobblers. You know, I like so good.
Somebody said justice for skillet cookies.
Look, I don't mind. I don't mind cookies.
I think they're good.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking them down. I just feel like we need to elevate the dessert. Like you need to have something with a little bit of complexity to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate you. Somebody said Popeye's fried chicken is all they want. From the 8-2, bro, they're gonna kick you out. Now I'm a when you win the Masters, you gotta they gotta respect it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm taking this all the way down. I'm like, look, we gonna have all sorts of different stuff. I didn't go that far as to like have Popeye's chicken. Right? I didn't do that. Lobster thermidor. Oh, I know you doing well.
What if you had to do a Masters dinner with just fast food?
Ooh, that's interesting. That's a whole nother thing. All right, let's see what are the absolute musts if you're going fast, or are we going like fast casual?
You got to be in your car to pick it up. You got to be in your car to pick it up.
Ooh,
I would go red beans and rice from Popeyes.
That's a good shout.
That's one of my sides. I'd do the
you're killing me because I've tried
mac and cheese from Chick-fil-A.
Is that?
That's good.
I don't
like it?
I mean, it's not that I don't like it. It's I don't love it.
Are there still KFCs?
Every man, John Lopez. Are you peasants still eating?
There's not
KFC?
As many in Houston anymore, man. There's just not.
I will.
So I'll change it to KFC mac and cheese. Red beans and rice from Popeyes.
Put a Trill Burger on here. What you mean?
I would
we can get that on the card.
Yeah, Trill Burger got the drive-thru now.
Give me some Frenchies.
Sourdough Jack from Jack in the Box.
Okay.
And then waffle fries from Chick-fil-A. I do hit Chick-fil-A with the waffle
fries. That's the best fries, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody said 281, you're about to get in an argument who has the best French fries.
Yeah.
Well, we did.
Damn, they're close.
Yeah, I'm not going to dig all the way into that. It's like Crystal Burgers. Somebody said they need a tuna.
Crystal Burger.
Tuna nigiri.
Where you live at?
Crystal Burger.
Oh, and I appreciate our Filipino brethren.
Brother
who said,
in the Midwest. Where's he at?
I know, right? It doesn't matter. As long as you're listening, we appreciate you. But yeah. Somebody said you need to try Jollibee Chicken. I've tried. Well, actually, I haven't had enough Jollibee Chicken. I had one with a place that was just opening, so I don't think that was a fair look. But yeah, shout out to our folks from the Philippines with the Jollibee Chicken. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, that's the tough part is if you're trying to make a Houston-centric one,
yeah,
it gets hard because we got all sorts. We got so much diversity. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to make that happen. Right, anyways, we need a Houston golfer winning this and doing that for us, though.
Oh, I got you on the Masters, man.
Okay, all right.
I got you.
But yeah, Scottie Scheffler is expected to be up
Scheffler
there.
Scheffler will be up
Rory,
there.
Rory's got a lot
really
of
hot right now, and I put him on my pool, which means he's probably going to lose. Really hot. I would say Morikawa, real hot right now. Real good at Augusta. Maybe some long shots. Will Zalatoris makes a real appearance. He's back.
Remember
he had that broken wrist last year. He's playing pretty well right now.
He helped me get to Vegas. Remember?
Yeah, he's a long shot. He helped you get to Vegas.
I'm looking forward to all
some
that.
Money with Will.
Also looking
ago.
Forward to in the 1 o'clock hour of this show. Are you a fan of comedian Brian Regan? We'll be giving away tickets to a show for him. I think he'll be having that in December. Or wait, when is that? Again?
December 4th.
December 4th. Okay, so yeah. Later in the year, but you have an opportunity to win those tickets listening to In the Loop today. All right, coming up next, let's go around the NFL, including who is possibly, actually, let's get into just the sports Emmys. Sports Emmys are out, and there's an interesting omission on this. We'll talk about that and more next.